Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get things started here. This is the Tuesday afternoon session, Safety and Training. Our first speaker, the title of the presentation is Coordinated Operator Training. Our presenter is Graham Upton. Graham is the Director of Business Development with Doron Precision Systems. He directs the business development activities at the company and is responsible for supporting the sales and marketing of engineering teams for ground vehicle simulation products. Prior positions include business development assignments at Lockheed Martin and the Link Simulation Company. Graham holds a BS in aeronautical engineering from London University, England. How about a warm welcome for Graham?
Thank you. I think I'm on. I guess part of my job is to keep everybody awake from after the lunch break. I try to do that. And what I want to present to you this afternoon is looking at some technology that is available to improve the simulator. And I want to go through some early beginnings of simulation technology, and then focus on the paper itself. I do want to go through some of these main points here, knowing that many in a crowd like this may not be familiar with simulators. I know we recently heard a presentation about them, so it got you up to speed on simulation technology. So I want to explain what simulator training is, and look at some history, briefly, of simulator training, and look at the advantages, and then home in specifically on simulator training in the mining industry, and then looking at some of the traditional approaches that are used, and then focus on a coordinated training approach that I have to present to you using some of the latest technology that is available today, and then look at some of the results. So this is how I want to kind of unpack the presentation with you. Now, I use the word coordinated simulator training, but we're not talking about coordinated flying. My background is in aeronautical engineering. My plan is not to try to get the mining trucks, et cetera, to take off and fly. That would be an advantage on the haul roads, for sure. But I will focus on ground simulation mainly today. So what is simulation training? Well, the biggest part of simulation and training is actually not in the mining industry. 95% of simulation and training is in the flight simulation industry. And the simulator on the right there on your screen is one of the major manufacturers in flight simulation companies. It's a CAE Electronics. They're based in Montreal. They have large offices in Tampa, Florida as well, and they're one of the major producers of flight simulators for around the world. There are many other companies as well that make flight simulation. The one on the left, of course, is a military application. So the military and commercial is certainly a large part of simulation users, and has been doing so for many years. Obviously, we got the Humvee and some of the other newer ground vehicles heavy into simulation. So the military heavy into simulation, they've been so for many years. One of the products that we've recently delivered is a snowplow simulator on the right side, and that is in use in Minnesota. And so there's many other applications of simulators beside the mining industry. Just want to give you a brief history. You may know this, you may not, but I figure it was interesting, particularly after a lunch break. Simulation first started in the town that I've been living in for the last 35 years, Binghamton, New York, and it's back in 1928 to 30. The Ed Link designed the first simulator. It's called the Blue Box. And you can see the on the bottom right there, the picture of it. There's several of them now in museums. And he basically came up with this, the pilot trainer. And that was used by many pilots between the First and Second World War. and it enabled them to perform instrument training, which they were never able to do before. So this was the first introduction, if you want, in simulation. And for the next 20 to 30 years, it was really used exclusively for flight training and for training pilots. They were, of course, very basic analog machines back then. But they were, many, many of them were built. The Blue Box is thousands and thousands of them made, tens of thousands. They were being attributed to helping the U.S. pilots have success in the Second World War due to the fact it was used for instrument training and training in the cloud, you know, without being able to see out the window. As time went on into the 50s and 60s, we started getting into development of ground-based simulators, and you can see a variety of products there. Many of them were made by the Link division back then, which Ed Link started. There's a variety of different types there. As you can see, they're very outdated now, but it was really another 20 years before we migrated from just flight simulation to ground simulation, as we call it. I figured this picture was kind of interesting. It dates itself pretty well, but it just shows you the application of some basic simulators used for high school training and early education for students in driving, learning to drive. Still many, many high schools purchase these low-end simulators for driving. The next picture is moving on a little bit, but it still dates itself from the 70s. And again, this is before the advent of computer graphics. This particular one, as you can see, is using a film-based product. They were used very much in the 60s and 70s and early 80s until computer graphics was come along to a speed where you can operate it in real time. And in this particular case, they're all watching the same video and they're synced to the video and learning to drive. And some of the other devices, they would have individual videos, or a little bit later they become DVDs. And that's the sort of driving that in driving simulation was taking place back then. Somebody fairly famous visited our company in the early on. Durand Precision has been around for about 45 years, our company, so we've been working in driving simulation that long. I will be honest to admit that we've only been involved in the mining industry about 6 years, so there are other mining simulation companies that have more longevity than we have. We have been working in the driving simulation business for about 45 years, and back in the early 80s, I believe, President Reagan got a chance to drive one of the simulators. So the advantages of simulation training across these different industries is pretty common, and it's kind of interesting as you see that list, and I'm not going to read them all, is common to all the various segments of industry, whether it be commercial simulation, whether it be military simulation, police car driving, which we do a lot of that, fire trucks, EMS, and helicopter training, et cetera. All those points that I've put down there is common to all these different industries. Including mining. I've left that off because I'm going to focus on that in a few minutes here. Just about everyone, and you've heard these before, and I'm sure in previous presentations on simulation, and some of these points are very valid. There's a couple I want to just focus on. Certainly, accident evaluation. This is used in a tremendous way in flight simulation. I believe it is used to some extent in mining simulation. And some of the products out there, I think it could be used a lot more. We used it extensively at Link to investigate the shuttle accident. We had the space shuttle simulator. I worked on that for a few years back in the day, and we used that extensively to evaluate that accident. A number of other serious accidents we used simulation for, where we'd get the data and feed it in into the system and understand what went on. Again, research and development is another one. It's related to training, but it's broader than that. And there's some very extensive simulator products out there that are used entirely for research and development. One of them is the University of Iowa has a National Advanced Driving Simulator. You may have heard of that. It's called the NADS. It was actually sponsored by NHTSA, the National Driver Safety Organization, a government organization. And that's been used extensively. It's continuously updated for driving safety in the U.S. All these advantages, whether it's in the mining industry or the general flight simulation industry, bottom line is simulation is used to save money. And that connotates across several areas, and we will be getting into those in a few minutes here. Just to focus on the mining industry now and simulation and training, similar sort of picture here is what we saw on a previous presentation before lunch. I've used a number of our competitors and other products here, from the CAT sim to the Volvo Immersive 5DT and the Duran simulator. They all have strengths and weaknesses, but they are very used extensively now in the mining industry, whether it's more for some basic training, what we call a lower end product, to a fairly high fidelity product. Certainly they haven't got to the level in flight simulation. Some of those large CAE simulators with a 6 degree of freedom motion system are in the $5 to $15 million price range. We haven't got that in the mining industry. The industry does not justify that type of simulation product and expense, but there's a number of different companies and products out there, and they all have their place in the business. So let's just talk about some of the applications in the mining industry, and again, some of these points are very common to you. You've probably seen many of these before, but the three key things is safety, productivity, and cost management. And that's really the main use of a simulator, and safety is a big thing. This segment is really about safety and training, and I can't emphasize that enough. The use of the simulator to train either basic skills, equipment type training, emergency training, things that you cannot do on the equipment in the mine, whether it's the haul truck, the dozer, the excavator, or other mining equipment, and certainly you can do that on a simulator, and there's a lot of programs out there that allow you to do that in a lot of different ways. Certainly we want to do a lot of improvement of productivity, and we've seen some percentages that proven simulator usage provides to improve the productivity. And then the cost management, which is the bottom line, as I mentioned earlier, to maximize the use of the mine equipment. It reduces the wear on the actual equipment, operator misuse, and therefore improves the profit margin of the mining company. So these are kind of the three pieces of a three-legged stool. There's lots of components of these, but I believe these are the main applications of the simulator in the mining industry. So what are the advantages and benefits? Well, we drill down that a bit further, and you can see the list. I won't go through each one of these. It's kind of an expansion on the previous slide. But I just want to emphasize perhaps the last point on the last one. I haven't heard about this yet, but I really do believe that a good simulator, a good training curriculum, a good instructor, a well-trained instructor, because a piece of equipment is completely useless unless you have a qualified training program around that, really motivates the employee. And I've seen that time and time again in visiting mines the last 4 or 5 years and training divisions. We've done a lot of research. We're not the leading provider of simulators, but we've done a lot of research on what they're looking for and how can we help improve the products and provide a better training. And the motivation of the employee is very, very important. Just a quick training evolution now in the mining industry. I kind of put this up. MSHA task training was sort of very common in the 80s. In the 90s, it got more standardized. And then in the 2000, that really should be, I think, more 2000, 2010, it was very targeted. And we had specialized simulators for certain types of vehicles and equipment. And then we used, what I got here is mature adult learning principles. There's been a lot of research into how we train adults, somewhat different than maybe training younger students. How do we transfer that knowledge from the device? And I think those things have been implemented in the training curriculum in the last 10 to 15 years. So now I want to just focus on some technology and some approaches that we've been looking at and we've been incorporating into the products. The traditional training approach generally is one simulator, perhaps multiple modules, which is the driving positions or the operator positions, which can go into the surround visual and sound system. And usually then you'd have one instructor to each driver or operator. In some cases, there may be two simulators which are networked together and can be independently controlled or integrated at some level. Using some more advanced technology, what I'm proposing here is that it's now possible to have six, possibly more, depending on the load of the instructor and how well we can define his tasks, that we can fully integrate and coordinate the training activities in the pit and in different mine operations. Two or more haul trucks, a shovel, a scraper, maybe other vehicles, can be integrated into one scenario. And the instructor can have multiple views and communicate with each trainee or operator. So I'm calling this a coordinated approach, or maybe an holistic approach, where everything is working together. And some of the advantages of this, I think the big thing is communication. We know the biggest failure in a lot of areas of life, whether it be a marriage or whether it be a work situation, is a lack of communication. We all know that we all can improve in communication. And I believe this coordinated approach does allow for a much better communication between the operators, as you do in the real world. Each mine has certain rules and regulations from how they communicate. And I think this can be then transferred to the simulator training. The integrated exercises can replicate what goes on in the mine. I think that's important. We need to integrate the exercises to replicate exactly how the operations take place in the mine. And then the same digging operations, the excavating operations, can be observed by more than one, two, or even three of the operators. And additional items you can see there. And I think the last one I just want to focus on is emergencies. That's something we want to get down to zero in the mine, or accidents rather, down to zero. And I think those can be handled as a team, which is often the right way to handle emergency rather than in a single situation. So I want to now just share here some of the approaches we're using and the technology which is becoming available to increase the fidelity and allow for this type of an approach. As you know, the out-the-window scene or the synthetic database is a key part of a simulator. And some of these can be very specific, real-world situations and real-world environments. Some of them can be a hybrid between a generic and typical, and some are very generic. But we're finding now that the resolution and the fidelity of that synthetic scene can be improved greatly. The mesh, if you want, and the textures are available now to make those extremely realistic. And that's kind of the first point here, the availability of a high-resolution scene that can be produced by the hardware that's available at a reasonable cost. Obviously, if you throw more money at it, you can make something better, but we have to balance, of course, cost versus quality and capability all the time. The next one is what I call a very advanced physical model. I didn't know how technical to get this into this presentation. Some of you, I'm sure, have engineering degrees. Some of you come from other areas of expertise. So I didn't want to get too much into the details of the physical model, but there are extreme accurate math models available now to allow for the computational calculations to be done in a very precise way. And I'll get into a couple of those in a few minutes. But things like the tessellation or the deformations that are created either on the ground or now vertically can be computed very accurately. The rotational forces and the modeling of the tires and suspension can be done very, very accurately. So as we break these down into a few of the major components, if you want, the rock and soil deformations enable the excavator or the shovel operator to dig and remove product. And now these products now, rather than just do something which just represents soil or rock, these products now have physical volumes and weights and masses and can be measured. So when you go into the face and you remove rock or product and put it into the truck, they can be measured. They can be moved and dumped into the truck or spilled onto the ground, and we know those weights and the amount and the volumes. They're known, and the product is known, but affected by the operation. As a shovel is load is placed in the truck, the volume and weight is transferred into the truck, and then the spillage can be measured. So that's what I call the deformation calculations. So therefore, we can really provide a lot of accuracy in the loading of the truck. The previous visual effects or animations, they are useful, and in some levels of fidelity, they're still applicable. But as we get into the next level of simulation and fidelity, we can now do a lot more than just have animation showing soil and product get loaded into a truck in our simulation. Another kind of technical word that we use in this is particle simulation. There's ways now within real-time graphics engines and the software that goes along with those to actually design each of the particles, whether it be a very small rock or a 100-ton rock that gets moved. We can break these up into different sizes and weights and do a proper particle simulation and therefore improve the loading cycles and create for a special training scenario perhaps an imbalanced load, the effect of the performance by loading it incorrectly, the wear on tires, et cetera. There's many other ways that you guys know more than I do of the inefficiencies of loading that happen in the real world. We can now get into the simulation of some of those. there used to be just more the dynamic movement of Earth on the terrain, on the ground, and that has been used in flight simulation for landing situations, and particularly in tank and other simulations in the military for many, many years. 10 or 15 years now, but now we can also do the vertical surfaces. So as the shovel is going into the rock formation, the bucket can actually create forces, accurate forces on the face, and based on the type of rock, which we can change the hardness of that rock, allowing for better training in terms of accessing that area, removing the product from that area, and then dumping it. The weights and the effect of the bucket into the rock can be properly simulated, and the fill factors, etc., can be computed. So that again allows for proper computation of the rock and soil for settling and pouring techniques. And again, it also implies into the dig face. We've learned over the last several years of how to properly ascertain the dig face and the positions of the shovel to be most efficient. And having learned that, we're able to go in and accurately provide the dig face and the allowing the various forces to provide the proper computation. And then again, if there's spillage, we can then have a third operator perhaps operating a scraper and in the same coordinated simulation, remove the product as you would in the real world. Then the next phase, of course, is in the truck. A correctly loaded truck is very important. Obviously, it's much safer to operate a truck that's loaded correctly, it's more efficient. And as he goes to the high wall or the crusher, the dumping area, it improves the performance, improves the operator transfer of knowledge when he gets into the real world. And the weights and the volume is also computed of the product in the trucks. This is kind of the most technical slide, if you want, but I wanted to get into this, and then I kind of pulled away from providing too much information and how this is done. But basically, the initial work on terrain deformation and tessellation was done for simulation products in the military, where we were working on tank simulation products, the effect of tanks driving in the same place all the time, and the fact that the convoy of tanks, the last tank can't keep up with the first tank because of the effect of terrain. This is most likely applicable to some level in mines, where the haul truck is basically in the same position in the road. And I know when I was in the, I have to say this word right, Tembagpora, is it, in the Freeport's mine in the top of the mountain there in Indonesia, and it was very, very wet, very foggy. And the trucks were just not able to maintain their speed because of the wetness of the road, and then each one had to drive in a slightly different position. Well, we can now simulate that using terrain deformation based on the weight of the truck, the position of the truck, and we tessellate the ground using a deformable terrain technique. And as we continue to drive on that whole road, that gets worse and worse and affects the speed of the truck. This also can be applied to the vertical terrain as well. If we make mistakes in the high wall itself, in the rock face, we can have that affect the digging or the excavating operations. Just showing a picture of the tire there, it really kind of shows how that can be affected very much by the change in terrain. Mining simulation, like all simulation products, we also like to have scoring, and we've been doing a lot of that on our non-mining products for our police and fire truck and regular on-road truck simulators. We need to evaluate the driver. We need to properly score based on the correct parameters and look at the results, compare them with previous results of the same driver, a different driver, the perfect results, real-world results, etc. And what we're finding now with a more accurate database and a more precise way of measuring, we can come up with a much better scoring technique. So this is really what I'm just sort of presenting here, is the ability to score better based on a more accurate physics model, a more accurate terrain model, more accurate deformation capability. We're not done yet. There's continuous work in this type of technology. Certainly, if you throw a lot more hardware, computing power, you can get a faster, more complex engine running. As we know, it's all about in simulation, you need to maintain a 60 hertz frame rate. We don't want what we used to call the kind of the Mickey Mouse 20 hertz or less rate, which causes issues in eye-hand coordination. So we always want to maintain a certain frame rate, which is 60 hertz. We always want to have accurate textures, not too much blurriness, even close to the eye point. We want a fairly large field of view. In most cases, we want at least 240 degrees field of view horizontal and well above 90 degrees field of view vertical, more than that in a shovel. And therefore, these are challenges. And we're not done yet. We continuously look at the graphics card. NVIDIA is one that we use. There are other good graphics cards. And a lot of these are being developed and improved on a... We used to have a thing called Moore's Law in flight simulation, where every 3 years, the performance of something is doubled. Well, Moore's Law went away a few years ago with the advent of the PC-based graphics card and doing a lot of work on what we call the GPU rather than the CPU. So a lot of the physics computation and a lot of the high-performance computation is now done within the graphics card, and the CPU is just really doing the interfacing and doing the networking. And therefore, these cards have been very much driven by the gaming market. A lot of gamers want incredible amount of performance. So we found that this has been a big thing that we can hang on to and move with them as they push the development and the improvement of the gaming engines. And along with that, the physics models. We've seen a great improvement in the physics models with the gaming engines, and simulation companies have fed onto that. There are certain companies that just focus on the math and the physics engine as opposed to the complete simulation product. So that's really helped a lot as well. And then the whole wireless communication protocol. We're not completely wireless yet on visuals. There's too much data to pass. We still have to use cables from the computer to the visual scene, the projector or the screen. But certainly many of the other interfaces can be wireless now with the advent of very high-speed wireless. So that can improve the GUI. I did mention at the beginning that we're looking at maybe 4, 6, perhaps more operators with one instructor. To do that, the instructor's workload has to be very organized. He has to have a very good GUI and a very good ability to transfer that information to multiple students. So that's another area which we're working on to reduce the workload of the instructor. So back to the beginning, what are the results? It really comes back down to the basics. We want to improve the safety at the mine site. In our MCHO, as we know, it expects zero accidents. And I believe the simulators and the simulator training has gone a long way to get to that objective. We want to improve productivity and efficiency in all the different operations. And bottom line, we want to increase the profitability to the mining companies. Often that's very tight, and that does help. There's many secondary results. I mentioned one of them earlier about interest and the fact that the actual operator has to be incentivized or interested, and I think that's key. And some of the others are listed here. Better use of the instructor's time, and a shorter but more intense training period is very important as well, because as we know, the training can be basic training, refresher training, different type of equipment training, and that all helps bring us together to do a secondary set of results. So I think that's it. Thanks for your time. Hope there's some interest there in moving forward with technology in the simulation arena in the mining world. Any questions?
Good timing. Yeah. Thanks, Graham.
Yeah, thanks.